That Matters. I'm Jeffrey Zeltman, your host, and with me is perhaps our most frequent guest, Sarah Parmenter from You Know Who, web design studio, and blogger and geek designer, business beauty, and travel blogger, established 2001. And let's start with something you published on November 9th, 2016 at sazzy.co.uk. It's called America, Here Is Why I Love You. And you talked about diversity and hard work being encouraged and victories celebrated. You talked about the best national anthem in the world.
It's true. It's true.
At least melodically.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a whole verse that talks about killing slaves or something.
Oh, right.
So that we don't like. And that's why some people kneel. But they don't sing that verse, I guess.
We
don't sing that verse anymore. But I sound very ignorant, and I kind of am, which is sad. But so this was an election that shocked a lot of people and disappointed a lot of people, and especially, disappointed and scared half of America. And I think most of the rest of the world, like everybody, kind of just like, you know how there was nobody in America who cheered for Brexit. Like half the people in England thought it was a great thing. But everybody in America went, oh, that looks bad. And I'm pretty sure the same is true, only more so with this.
Yes.
And you, who I'm pretty sure weren't happy with this result of an election,
nope,
turned that to a positive, which is remarkable to me.
Oh, that's
kind. One of the only bright light, the first day after the election, it was like one of the only bright lights that I saw that day. So what motivated you to do that?
I guess because I've seen the way that England reacted with Brexit, and that was that we had very similar first couple of days here in the UK after Brexit. There was a lot of the very similar hate virile going around with racism and people thinking they were going to get kicked out of the country because of the immigration laws that the new prime minister wanted to bring in, etc., etc. And Trump has actually affected me more than Brexit has, in a strange way. I don't know whether it's because I just am very lucky that I get to spend a lot of time in America, or whether I just feel like America is such a superpower that it whoever gets elected is always going to affect me in some way, in a big way. And I just felt sad because I'd just come back from the States. I've just come back from doing an event part in San Francisco. And I witnessed so much. There's so much that's good about the States. But I don't think that when you live in a country, you actually get to take a step back and actually look at how visitors and other people view you. And it reminded me of this post that this American did, actually. He visited London, and then he visited Cornwall, a very kind of super cute remote part of the UK. And he did like this 35-point rundown, just bullet points, on all these things that he found charming about the UK. And this was like maybe last year, maybe even the year before. And that stuck in my head is like, huh, the things that sometimes we take for granted in our own countries are the things that other people find perfectly charming and reasons to come back, and the reasons why we're all wonderfully different. And I was seeing so much on Twitter, and I just thought, if I was in your shoes right now, what would be the thing that I would like to read? And it was that, really. It was me just writing down all the reasons why I think America, irrespective of who is at the top, is a wonderful country, and it's not going to be shaped by one person. It's the sum of all of the people who live in America. And that post was me just kind of saying, look, here as a visitor, this is what I think. you guys do amazingly, and this isn't going to change. This is your culture, and this is something that you should hold very dear to you, and I find perfectly charming and wonderful about your country.
Thank you. So one of the ways I think this works so well, this post at sazzy.co.uk, is that you don't say anything about the election per se, or that it's going to be all right. All that is implied because you're talking about what you love in the country. I've seen other posts where people who weren't happy with the result try to tell the rest of us that everything's going to be okay because this, that, or the other. And even though I know those people mean really well, that comes across as false to me and like condescending and like it's somehow trivializing the genuine concerns of the people who are upset.
Yeah,
didn't do that. You just basically said, here's what I love about America. And that was just amazing to me, actually.
Oh, thank you. I don't think it's fair for anyone to say that it's going to be okay, because it's not. It's not going to be okay, and it's not going to be okay for a long, long time. And us both sitting in a position of privilege, being white, we are in a position where it's not fair for us to say it's okay, because there's already a fallout of so many things happening to minorities and to all kinds of groups, that it's just it's not going to be okay for a long while, and it's up to everyone to pull together, all groups to try and pull together, and just remember that there's a lot to be celebrated about the country without who is the Prime Minister, going back to the UK, President.
One thing that I like about England is that the Prime Minister can kind of leave at any moment.
Yes. Yes, they can. And also, they don't have to be British by birth, which means that we could steal Obama.
Interesting. Well, I think he's got some time now.
Yeah, he does.
So I remember in 2005, was it 2000? It was early 2005. I went to England, which I love England. My brother lives in England, I always say. And if I could spend half my time there, I would. I love England. It's great. It's amazing. But I had just arrived at this At Media conference. It was a web design conference on the South Bank, I think. And it was very pretty. Sat in a outdoor cafe and looked at St. Paul's Cathedral across the river and stuff. It was at sunset. It was crazy. It was so beautiful. But a gentleman, not an English person, a person from another country, a European person, walked up to me, and I knew that I had known him since like the mid-90s, because we'd collaborated on projects. I'd known him virtually, but we'd never actually met. I'm not even going to say his name. It doesn't matter. And I understand his emotions were high. But so I went, oh, Rudolph. I'll just make that name up. But Rudolph, how? And I like opened my arms to hug him. And he just sort of pulled away and said, talk to me when you have another president. Because George Bush had just been elected, and a lot of people were unhappy, and I just thought, now that's not really fair, right? And so I was expecting a lot of that, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Not then. Well, then, yes, I was expecting a lot then, but now with the recent election, and so to see this, and to see that it went out to the world, it wasn't addressed just to your friends, it was to the world. So I really liked, again, I'm probably beating this into the ground, but I really liked your post.
Thank you.
How do you get yourself to... So you're a business beauty and travel blogger. How often do you write these days?
Well, actually, I have literally just changed that in the last couple of days, because I have had to have a really good sit down with myself.
Okay.
And try and figure out what I've wanted to do for a long time, instead of actually trying to keep two very different lines in the sand. I have a business that is in the beauty industry. I'm a web geek through and through. I read a lot of books that I don't share with. I feel like I'm almost like Jekyll and Hyde. I have two very distinct personalities.
Well, you also act.
And also act, yeah. So literally, I'm quite literally Jekyll and Hyde, and do a great job at acting at both sides of those personalities. But it's been a difficult one for me because there's a side of things that I do with the beauty industry and like very atypical girly type things in inverted commas that I haven't been sharing on my own personal site because I felt like that was my web hat, as you will. Like that's where I have to share stuff about Flexbox and that's where I have to share stuff about the latest CSSS properties, etc., etc.
Were you afraid that if you shared girly stuff on your site, on your web business site, that people would go, oh, well, that's not a serious developer, that's not a serious designer, we shouldn't hire her, she just, you know, I'll hire her if I need advice on my nails, but not, anti-woman sort of, okay.
Yeah, I was. I only because it's one of those funny things where I have felt like my audience that I've built up. We all take, if you've been in the web industry a long while, especially right from the throes of Twitter, it's hard work to build your audience. It's not like we all get these followings and people who are into our work overnight. It takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of sharing with the community. Now, when you've built that community up within one community, you feel like you owe it to your audience to provide and serve them with certain content. And that's been great and that's fine. But that's where I was kind of being a bit more like my blog, which is my personal blog. It's not my work website, which I have to update because now I do something completely different with that as well. But it's my personal blog. So why am I trying to appease two different audiences or just one very, very significant audience, which is the web industry? That's fine. But if I post about something else, I'm sure they're not going to suddenly say, oh, well, it's horrendous that you're now posting stuff about beauty. They just won't read it. And they'll come back the next time I post something about Flexbox and same vice versa. There's ways of filtering. Like when I had the epiphany that filters exist for this reason, that I should actually stop trying to hide both sides and bring them into the light.
Well, I think also for me, like I've been blogging, I guess, a long time and sharing personal stuff is part of what I do now. And some people tell me it's their favorite thing I do. Other people don't like it. They don't have to read it.
Exactly.
But the more dimensional you are, I don't know. When I first started putting content on the web in 1995, I did everything with the Royal We.
Yes, like, I did the same.
We find, and partly for fun, because I thought it was amusing, and partly once I started actually freelancing, to make it sound like I had a bigger organization going, like, like, my team, which was just, you know, me. So,
but tell me something interesting. Did that actually serve you quite well at the beginning to do that?
It absolutely did. And there's people who miss that. There's people who, a lot of the things that I've stripped away, well, I would say that I've lost audience. Like, I know I have, right?
Okay.
So I don't know that I'm a good advisor on any of this, but, I probably lost audience today by opening this podcast with political views because there are people who will have perhaps very different ones and go, you know, yeah, I don't like that guy anymore.
Yeah, but then that's what's wrong with the world, isn't it? That we're all not tolerant of each other's views. We're not seeing both sides of the coin. If you're the type of person to turn off the minute you hear a view that's opposing to yours, you're the problem.
I could argue, though, that, let's say, I could argue as a Trump voter that if someone starts talking about really specific gender issues or gender roles, that they might go, this is just, I'm so tired of this. Like, how much special treatment do you need? And nobody cares about me. And I could argue as a non-Trump voter and certainly as a person of color, like, I don't think it's just another opinion. If the Ku Klux Klan likes this guy, then I have a problem with it. And do you know what I mean? Or
It's running.
Yeah.
I mean, it's running very deep at the moment. And it's certainly not just trivial stuff that we're dealing with.
Yes.
But I think hearing different views on things, even if they completely oppose mine, it helps me just, even if it's just to sift out people in the future, even if it was so that someone said, well, do you know what, I'm so disgusted with the fact that someone opened a podcast about that, I'll never listen to their stuff again. Well, that's fine, then it's not the right audience anyway. But
yeah, I like open-mindedness too. It's never as successful as passionate partisanship.
No.
It's like I was the most successful when at building a following when I was only about web standards. And the moment I said, okay, my work on that is done, there's still lots to do, but I would now like to think about something else, like design again. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. I've done too much thinking about front end and everything, and I'm ready to move on. At that point, I lost people. And at the point where List Apart said, this is great. To a certain extent, the web standards battle has been won. So now we're going to go back to talking about UX and content strategy as well. To some extent, we lost some audience because on the web, everything's very niche.
Yes.
And people go to a thing for a really specific reason. So if you have a blog where you're saying you're the latest and greatest things about Flexbox, you're going to have a certain passionate follower that you might not have if one day you write about Flexbox, another day you write about election, another day you write about your dad. It's like some people really don't. And I see both sides of that too.
Yeah, I do see both sides of that. My reasoning for changing a lot of my blog though was that I actually was getting kind of annoyed at all these sort of beauty bloggers and people who were just kind of popping up every day and you know, the thing is that they're showing up. I can't fault them. They're showing up. They're doing the work.
That's 90% of it.
It is 90% of it. But sometimes I feel like the person I would have wanted to follow when I was younger does not exist on the internet right now. I would like to be that person where there's a girl in her bedroom somewhere going, well, hang on a second, what if I don't just want to learn about the latest mascara? What if I want to know what, like, a really, really great book on business studies is? What if I want to follow someone who's actually doing something entrepreneurial who's female? What if I also know that that person also codes but also kind of really likes girly things as well? I sort of realized that I wanted to be that role model for people and that I'd give it a go.
See
what happens.
I think the greatest thing about the internet is that you look at what you're missing and instead of whining about it, you make it. You be the change. It's like the place where you can be the change that you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
More than it. I mean, when I started List Apart, it was because there were websites about web design that talked about graphic design, but nothing else. Mm-hmm. And there were sites that talked about code, but nothing else. And nobody was talking about content, or at least nobody that I was aware of. There were no sites that you could go to and get a reliable, you know, and UX wasn't even something that we were talking about at the time. But just that, like, these different strands. And I thought, well, I would like to see a publication where all those strands are discussed. And so I started one because it's very easy to do that. But then comes the part of showing up and doing the work week after week.
Hard. That's the hardest bit.
Yeah. Well, and at a certain point, if you have something that's bigger than you, you find people and they help you. And then the other day someone asked, well, how do you do all these things? And the answer is I don't. I have worked with all these great people who do a lot of the things now. But it's hard to do that when it's just you.
Mm,
How do you balance blogging and working for clients and the different kinds? Because you also, you do design work. You have an app that you're working on, right? Are you still... That you're talking to a big company about...
No,
you've dropped it.
Yes, that got sold.
It got sold.
Yes.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. I will.
Did you ever write about that?
No, haven't been able to yet.
Because it's secret.
Yes.
Because the company that bought it is very secretive, perhaps.
Yes.
Okay.
I will tell you about it off.
Okay. Is it a company perhaps that you have to buy a different connector every time they make something, for no, example?
Not that one. Otherwise,
not that one.
No, not that one. But basically, the honest answer is I haven't tried it yet. I've been spending this week recoding my website and just trying to get content plans in place.
Your you-know-who?
No. Well, the you-know-who one I have been recoding as well, but I've basically spent all week in WordPress on my personal blog. Because you-know-who actually, the website is horribly out of date, but I'm still doing work behind the scenes because the work that I've been doing has basically been a continuation of some stuff that I did out in LA. And it's all to do with like social media campaigns and things like that. So I've actually been fine on that front. But I just kind of need to rejig it and tell the world what I've been up to. But in terms of my personal stuff, yeah, the honest answer is I haven't tried it yet. I've got a content plan in place for next week. And my plan is to just carry a camera wherever I go, really, and try and be okay with sharing everything.
a real camera.
Yeah.
Like a Canon or something, not your phone.
No, not my phone. No, actually be okay with taking a camera out. And, you know, when I go and do really interesting business meetings at Blush Bar or I'm going up to London for a meeting, actually just sharing more about that side of my life with the internet and see how that goes.
Now, you do a lot of work under NDA. Right.
Yes.
When I go to look at the work section of your site, it basically says, sorry, I can't show you too much.
That's because I changed it from a template where it actually had its own section for everything under work. And that's my job for tonight, is actually just to put that back into the right section so that it shows up.
You don't have the problem that you can't ever discuss or share your work.
I do have that problem for probably like 80% of my work, but there is work on my blog. It's just under the wrong section right now. It's like hidden. You can't see it. So that's
got it.
That's my coding job for tonight.
If I knew the URL, I could go look at it, but
it's not password
protected. It's just
No.
There's no connection to it.
Yeah, it's not connected up to the new template that I've been working on. Because apparently when you use a WordPress template now, even when you basically strip it back to being nothing like the template that you've purchased, it's an absolute mess. And you would have been better just coding it by hand.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I would love to have a show where you and another person that I work with talk about that. What did I want to ask you about all this? Yes, how you get work when you can't show work?
That's a really good question. So recently, I guess once upon a time, my work was the traditional kind of have a virtual storefront, have a contact form, show all the work you've been doing and put really nice text blurbs with it that say why you designed it a certain way and for people to contact you. That was the traditional kind of storefront way. And then when I went out to LA for a year and a bit, I was working with celebrities and influencers and all kinds of people there. And then when I came back, I basically retained those connections and have been looking after social media profiles and all kinds of things.
For celebrities?
Yes. And that world is very small. So trust is a major factor in that world. And I guess it's just one of the very few industries where they're not particularly going to your website every 5 seconds. It's more of a word of mouth thing, because if you do a good job for one person, they're a very, very small network. So that's been my life
You can't really talk about the celebrity stuff that you do.
You can't, because you are literally mimicking their tone of voice, their tweet patterns, their all kinds of things. You are basically being them on social media. So you have to do it to a point where people, unfortunately, they do not either have the time, inclination, or are just not very good at it, but have to keep up their social profiles. So you're not allowed to discuss, obviously, that you are a third person updating the social profile of someone who has many, many, sometimes millions of followers. Because it's a form of deception on the fans' behalf.
Do you respond individually to fans?
Yes, you have to. In their
so part of the job is if I will just if 10,000 people respond to a certain celebrity's tweet, you thank them in the voice of that celebrity.
Yeah, I mean it's dependent on the it's dependent on lots of things. But if someone has traditionally never responded to fans, if they're kind of one of those celebrities that just never responds to fans, then you never respond to them.
Sure.
If they're the type of person who responds to everyone, you try and respond to as many as you can, etc., etc. You have to literally look and mimic exactly what they do, and not just mimicking them. It's also about trying to curate content for them, trying to help them with, you know, a style of how they're actually pushing socials. Because most of them, they have access to great content. They have access to stuff that is so interesting, behind the scenes pictures and
tracks,
set pictures.
Here's the bass track for my upcoming song, for example.
Absolutely. And they have access to the most wonderful imagery, professional imagery in most cases, and they just don't know what to do with it. They're just
behind
not in
the
our
scenes is such fascinating stuff.
It is,
generally,
yeah.
Because we live in such a world of illusion now, and
yeah.
The professionals who go, everything that you see, it, even if it's just TV newscaster just sitting there, there's like five makeup professionals that are responsible for and lighting a certain spot on their forehead and all this crazy stuff. And I find that. Do you also find that your acting talent helps you when you have to mimic, not that you're acting out the part out loud, but to help you get into the voice of some celebrity that you're doing? Do you sort of improv your way into their personality like you would as an actor? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, I find it a bit more meticulous than that in some ways. It's much more, it's a lot of spreadsheets. It's a lot of having something on paper that says you can't tweet during these hours because they're live on stage in X, Y, or Z. Like, you have to be really careful about their personal schedules as well, because if you're tweeting, oh, just ate a hamburger, and they're on stage in Milan or something, you've made a massive error.
Has that ever happened?
It has when I worked in Los Angeles before, but not with me. But it's just you just have to be careful, that's all. It's but as far as tone of voice goes, some of them have very specific tones of voices, some of them are just quite juvenile, or you just get used to it, especially when you're working with the same people kind of over and over again.
That's cool. So you're basically on retainer for clients, but you're designing their voice, or you're copying the voice that you're copying the brand that they've established and extending it, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that side of things is actually one of the smaller services in some ways. Designing, they are personal brands. Each of them are a personal brand, and it's much more about actually, okay, well, you know, when you're thinking about if you're going to collaborate with products and services or people, what kind of products and services would you collaborate with so that we can tailor your entire social profiles around this? Are you looking to grow your following? Are you looking to maintain it?
So you talk to them about all that stuff. It's not like a copywriting job per se.
No, okay. Not at all. It's more about, it's literally it's a personal branding service, but in some ways my job is easier because I have access to great content. So it's looking at lots and lots of different aspects of their social media profiles, where they post, are they better going on to Instagram or Facebook, what they should be doing and when. It's much more granular than just copying a tone of voice, because, you know, that's, teenagers can do that, if in all honesty. We used to have a whole group of teenagers doing it when I worked in LA.
Wow.
So that's not the hard bit.
Can you hang on a second? Because I need to thank a sponsor here.
Of course.
Okay. Thank you very much. Encapsula is the sponsor that I want to thank today. As we all know, the web can be a dangerous place. Encapsula is a cloud service that makes your website faster and safer. They have a worldwide network that inspects every packet that comes and goes from a website, blocking attacks against your website while delivering your content to your customers faster. With a global network of 30 data centers and 2 terabits of bandwidth, Encapsula sits in between your servers and your customers, routing and filtering traffic. Attack traffic like scraping bots, denial of service attacks, never make it to your servers. Meanwhile, your content is cached and connections are optimized using their CDN content. Encapsula's custom software and servers, plus their 24/7 operations team, keep it all running. They protect and accelerate over 4 million websites every day, from individual bloggers all the way up to Fortune 500 companies. And because Encapsula is a division of Imperva, an experienced security company, you know your site is in safe hands. Every day, websites of all sizes are attacked. Criminals use giant botnets to scrape website content, try to break into databases, and bring sites down with denial of service attacks. On the performance side, customers are impatient, and sites that take even 3 seconds to load can turn off potential customers. And if your site goes down or is unavailable, customers will go somewhere else. Encapsula solves all these problems. And Encapsula is offering a special deal to Big Web Show listeners. Just visit encapsula.com/bigwebshow and enter the code BIGWEBSHOW, and you'll get 1 month free. That's 1 month free when you visit encapsula.com/bigwebshow and use the code, all caps, all one word, BIGWEBSHOW. Thank you, Encapsula. That sounds pretty cool.
It does.
Do you get lots of attacks?
No. I mean, sometimes if you put out something on Twitter and then WordPress falls over, but I don't think that's quite the same as people doing DDoS attacks to Amazon.
What about for your clients?
No, not so much. It tends to be that their personal sites are the least trafficked places.
That makes sense. Do you design those as well?
I haven't yet, actually, because it seems to be that in that industry, they're just not needed, to be honest.
Or they all go to the same shop?
No, not at all. A lot of them don't even have them. They have their own domain names.
They don't have websites.
Some of them don't, especially some of the sort of British actors. They don't. It tends to be that everything now is done via a social profile.
Is that bad for the web design industry, like the bulk of people listening to this show? Is it bad for them that...
I think that celebrities going elsewhere or not having websites is the least of our problems right now.
Well, it's not just celebrities, though. What you're saying is true, it could also be for companies. Like, maybe instead of a website, they just want a social media presence.
I think it's different for places where they have... you know, a physical address or content like a blog that they need to keep updated and things like that. I think more the problem with businesses is them looking at other services like Wix or Squarespace or any of those kinds of platforms rather than actually going back to, you know, how it was back in our day.
We wrote our own HTML. Well,
yeah, back in the day of where someone would contact you and you would hand roll your own website. You know, those days were glorious. And so,
I didn't even use WordPress till like 2005.
Neither did I.
My that's where my archives, they actually go back to 1995. But
right.
You can't see that by clicking my archives because my WordPress usage only goes back to 2005.
I had the same problem. I was actually just curious as to how far back my blog would go. And I had the same problem because I realized that in the early days, back in 98, 99, I blogged on GeoCities and then just mapped my domain. So I don't.
Did you lose that stuff?
Yeah.
Now, did that get saved by the Wayback Machine?
Some of it has, I think. From what I could see, there was just some text in very, very tiny Verdana typeface.
Yeah.
It was like 8 points or something crazy.
Nine pixels.
It was so, so small. Just talking about my friends at school, that was how I knew that it was from the right era.
Were you in high school then?
Yeah, I
Do you
was.
call it high school? You don't call it high school.
We call it senior school.
Senior school.
Yeah.
In America, that would be like for
But like
old people.
old people.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's senior school over here. So yeah.
What's senior services?
No, we don't use the word senior for what you guys call seniors.
There's an Elvis Costello song that I loved for many years called Senior Services, and I always assumed it was some well-known British phrase for something, but no. He just made it up.
Okay. Yeah, no, we don't. Yeah, your word for seniors we call like OAPs.
OAPs?
Yeah, old age pensioners, OAPs.
Pensioners.
Yeah,
wow,
pensioners.
That's a great one.
It's very...
Yeah, that's because we don't have pensions.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Well, we do, but less and less.
Yeah.
You see, yep. Like, 90-year-old folks, like, working in big box stores as greeters, and it's very scary. It's very scary. I plan to work till I die, though. But, of course, you can't always predict, because anyone can be disabled at any time or become sick or the demand. I mean, I love Milton Glaser. But how many other 85-year-old designers do I know that are working? Pretty much none. None. And his stuff's still cool.
Yeah,
it's true. Like, can you imagine, like, having, like, several generations, like, new generations just keep responding to your work? That's amazing to me.
That is you.
That is, well, not yet. I don't know.
There's many generations of web designers. You, like, you're being humble. There's many generations of web designers who look up to your stuff.
I have just been, we've been updating the Studio Zeldman website. And some of the portfolio pieces, actually, we link to the Wayback Machine. There's actually write-ups where we talk about a project, and then you have to go to the Wayback Machine to see it. And you can't really see it the way it was, because... Now it looks like a tiny little strip of bacon, but in those days it filled your screen, right?
Yeah.
And now that type looks really tiny and blurry, but back then it was crisp and large. And, you know, so there's all that.
I think that's awesome. It reminds me of like when you go to London and you walk around the square where kind of all the lawyers and solicitors are for the Crown Courts and things. And there's like the really old law houses where you walk over the steps and it has like established 1721 or whatever the business is. I think linking to the Wayback Machine in your portfolio is the online equivalent of like having a plaque at the front of your business that says established in 2000.
Thanks. That's very nice.
I think it just means you've been around for a long time and that you're trustworthy.
Well, as long as that's not the only thing we're linking to, I guess we're good.
Yeah, I know. Of course.
I love that, too. One of the things I love about visiting Europe is that stuff is old. And really everywhere in the world except, you know, in the Americas. Right. But most places that I go outside of the Americas, and I mean like Latin America too, all North America, it's still relatively not ancient.
Yeah.
And just everywhere else in the world, there's ancient stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, really ancient stuff. That's I must admit, like, London actually isn't my favorite city. New York's my favorite city. But when I walk around London and I see the Houses of Parliament and all the really, really old, the monument and all the really old buildings, I think, wow, this was here during the Great Fire of London. Like, this blows my mind.
Yep. I look at the Houses of Parliament, or I went through Rome, and I was just like, you know, you stand in the Parthenon and go, like, they didn't have computers. Like, this shouldn't be possible. You go to a cathedral that was built 1,000 years ago, and you're like, these people didn't have toilets, they didn't have showers, but somehow they made this. Like, I don't get it. How is that... I couldn't do that with a protractor and a ruler, whatever they're doing, you know, where you go like ancient Arabian culture and you're just like, how did they invent zero? Like the first person to realize that was a concept, right? And the Western world fought to prevent the spread of the knowledge of zero because zero is considered heretical. right? Religious folks in the West were like, no, no, no. If there's zero, that means that's an absence. And there can't be an absence because God is present everywhere. So therefore, there can't be the number zero. It was like the doctrine prevented them from allowing a mathematical abstraction, which then prevented them from doing a lot of stuff.
Wow. I did not know that.
And I did not explain it very well, so that wasn't that helpful. But I see that you participated in Geek Mental Health Week recently. What was that? That's the second year now for that?
Yes, I believe so. It's run by, I think Andy Clark is something to do with it. He contacted me and said, would I write something for it? And I did. So it was just before I went out to do another speaking thing, and it was, I think,
it's very personal.
Again, one of those kind of gulp moments of, well, I'm just going to put it out there now. I think the problem is when you've been trolled as much as I have throughout my career, you get to a point where you just go, nothing bad really can happen now. So I'm just going to keep putting stuff out there. And in some ways it's quite liberating. But
you didn't get shut down or silenced or cowed by all the hassle that you got. You were just like, you know what? They haven't killed me yet, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Pretty much. And that's been a driving force behind like why I've changed over everything this week, because I just thought, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time worrying about trolls, and I feel like I've already done that in my career, and I'm going to have more without a doubt, because you can't stop it. But some of the things that have happened to me have been so horrendous that I just don't care anymore.
You get particular kinds of trolls that are horrible.
Yeah, right?
When I get trolls, they're like, I don't know, I don't like web standards, man, or whatever. It's not, or it hasn't been personal in a really horrible way. Like, first of all, you're a woman, and so there's always that, and they do use that.
I think, I don't know. I think maybe there's part of, you know, when you share anything online, you open yourself up to it. As a woman in a, you know, the web is unfortunately still very much a man's world, even though we're fighting it all the time. I think working in the web early on, Rachel Andrew was actually the person who I looked up to when I read. I still do. She's an incredibly smart person. And I remember going into W.H. Smith's, which is like a place where you can get magazines and stationery and all kinds of things over here. And I went in when I was about, must have been about 17, 18, and picked up a copy of .NET Magazine. And it was one of the really early copies. And Rachel was writing in it. And I saw her name first. And then there was a tiny avatar next to it. And I thought, oh, thank goodness, there is another woman in this industry. And she was the woman back then in our industry. And thank goodness that it's got
some... There were some others, but...
There were some others, but very, very few, especially British at that time. So I think in British publications, I was just seeing a lot of Rachel, and it was fabulous.
And she's still at it.
And she's still at it.
And she's still breaking new ground. She's still exploring new technologies, getting there before other people, writing about them, explaining them. She's amazing.
She is amazing. Yeah. She's a very, very good teacher. And I feel like I've looked up to her in some ways my whole career. And it's been lovely. And it's nice to now share a stage with her. It's kind of strange sharing a stage with her at events and things. It's wonderful. And
when did you start speaking?
2007 was my first speaking gig, so 10 years next year.
And who invited you, and how did you get started, and what was that about?
It was a guy called Alex Alder, who invited me to speak at an event in Bristol, and it was myself, Elliot J. Stocks, and John Hicks, and there was one other person, Dan Donald, I believe. And it was just it was kind of a small event, and he said, you know, I think I was a lot better at blogging back then I was blogging a lot more frequently because I wasn't scared about the fact that I didn't have an audience. So I was blogging, oh, I've done this wrong, and I thought I could do this, and, you know, this code went wrong, and I was blogging a lot more frequently. And he said that he thought I would be good at speaking, and the rest is kind of history after that. They snowballed.
How did you get the courage to do it?
I'd been doing stage stuff since I was tiny, and I think that it would be stupid to say that that didn't help in any way.
Sure.
Because you can control nerves a lot better than maybe other people who hadn't been used to getting up on stage and just doing other things. But I'm still terrified. I hide it very well. But I think that you go from being terrified about how you're coming across to other people and the way that you're saying something and are you explaining it well enough or do you sound like an idiot? You go from that to actually then when you've been speaking a while, you go into this different realm, or at least I do, of thinking, gosh, I hope that people are getting enough value out of what I'm saying.
Yes.
I know that they've paid a lot of money for these tickets. I hope that they go away thinking, yes, that was worth it, or she was interesting, or I'd like to learn more about her. And they don't sort of, they're not in their heads thinking of booing you off the stage or something like that.
That's the difference between good speakers and great speakers, I have found. And it's not an innate talent or anything, because all speakers have talent or they wouldn't be doing it. The ones who worry that they're providing enough value are the great speakers. And the ones who go, hey, this is what I do, I can wing it, that's okay. And that's okay at a certain level, but it's not going to be the same value. This is my cat who has decided he wants attention. So, sorry. Giovanni. Oh, my God, now he's hooked his claws into my sweater. Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah, speaking's one of those funny... I think it's one of those funny things that never gets easier. You have a new talk and then you go through the same cycle all over again.
It gets harder. I think because you realize it's like everything. At first, I think there's a learning curve like this for everything that we do. At first, it seems impossible. And then mm-hmm. as we begin to get it, we go, oh, this isn't so bad. Doesn't matter. Design, writing, whatever it is. And you think you get to a place where you think, I know what I'm doing and I'm pretty good at this. And then you hit this wall where you realize how much better you could be.
Yeah.
And how great a very few people are. And then that's what you aspire to, but it kills you because you're constantly beating yourself up going, wow, I wish I was as good as so-and-so, or how do they seem so natural? What can I do differently? How can I provide? And I listened to 12 brilliant present, 11, I have to make one. So 11 brilliant presentations at an event apart. Like every month, just about, I'm at a different show hearing the smartest people I know in web design talking. And I just, you know, I obviously have enough examples in front of me for how to be great at it. But that doesn't, it's like watching Citizen Kane doesn't mean that you can go make Citizen Kane, if you know what I mean. There's still, like, there's this level that some people attain that... again, I'm a pretty good speaker, I know that, but I mean, there's this level, this very high level that's just, wow, like, blowing the hair off your face, you know, just like,
that's totally.
Yeah.
That's without getting sycophantic about an event apart, because I'm very aware that people will probably know I'm a speaker there, and it's going to turn into you would say that, but I love that conference, both as a speaker and as an attendee as well. I love sitting in the audience and I love watching other speakers. And I love how everyone has their own kind of patter and their way of doing things. And the way one speaker will do their talk can be completely different to another, but still mind-blowing. You know, Jeremy Keith gets up on stage and you just want to shoot yourself because he's one of the people who gets up and consistently does this kind of very breathy, I'm just going to talk
like he's just chatting. And it's
always
different. It's not that every word has been written in advance and he's reading it out, you know, and he's memorized it. No, it's that he's like the smartest person on earth who happens to be chatting with you.
Yeah, but it's also like he's in his bathrobe in a comfy pair of slippers smoking a pipe.
Yeah.
and he's like just so cool about it. And then you've got Brad Frost, whose energy on stage is just infectious, and he just bounces around and gives across all this great content and is funny. And yeah, everyone has their own styles. It's wonderful.
It is. And that makes you travel a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it makes, to me, if what I'm traveling for is good, I like travel.
Totally. Yeah. I love that. I love that when you do the same conference with the same kinds of people every year, it feels like you're a traveling family.
Yes.
It's very strange. You sort of, yeah. I mean, I finished speaking in, where was that? Oh, Florida, when we all nearly got trapped by the hurricane. And I went into the airport lounge to just sit out a slight delay. And I heard Sarah from the other side. And I turned around and there was Brad. And we had a nice little chat. And it feels like you never know when you're going to bump into anyone. But it's like a traveling family. It's lovely.
It's very tribal.
It is.
I need to do another sponsor. And then we're going to sum things up.
Okay.
Okay. This episode of the Big Web Show is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Why make payment integration more difficult than it has to be? Braintree's powerful full-stack payment platform allows you to accept nearly any type of payment from any device with just one integration. It's flexible to your system's needs and supports most programming languages. So whether you're using Java, Ruby, or Python, you'll always have a range of server-side and client-side SDKs available. Braintree makes payments and your job a whole lot easier. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/BigWebShow. That's BraintreePayments.com/BigWebShow. I love those folks.
They've got cool branding.
They've got a great branding, and they really support everything. Android, iOS, JavaScript, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, wow. Python, Ruby. It's crazy. They're really great, and they take every kind of... And they've been sponsoring this show forever, which I really like, because this show is just a conversation, and I never know, speaking about worrying about value, I never know if we're going to just have something that's meaningful to share, or mm-hmm. it'll just be, that was a nice chat for those people, but there was nothing in it for a listener. I never know. Yeah. And I don't worry about it. The show is the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to have someone who just keeps on saying, yeah, we believe in this, and sponsoring it is great to me.
Best feeling.
I don't usually thank sponsors or anything because I'm like too cool for that. But I really like Braintree for what they do. So you have a podcast, or you had a podcast, but that seems to be on hiatus at the moment.
Yes.
What happened there?
Oh, nothing. Just really busy. And it was scheduling guests and stuff is, it can be really tough, especially when people let you down at the last minute, or they've forgotten and their schedule isn't, you know, synced and stuff like that. So might bring it back in the future, but life took over.
I recently did a podcast that was unlike any other I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. It was for Paul Ford and Rich Ziotti from, I want to say Porchlight, but I know that's wrong. This is just my brain turning to mush. I'm really sorry. It's a wonderful podcast for their company, whose name I'm forgetting publicly, which is terrifying to me. So postlight.com. Anyway, here's what they do. They have you meet them in a recording studio.
Oh, smart.
It's so nice. And they have two engineers sitting there behind in a control booth.
Mm-hmm.
And they put real mics in front of everyone. And it's really nice.
Mm, yeah, that's the way forward.
You actually sit there looking the person in the eye that you're talking to. It's very nice. Postlight, isn't it? Wow. I'm going to say Postlight again because since I had that horrible meltdown. My brain's not working that well this week.
Well, I think that's, you know, It's been a tough week. There's a lot to wrap your head around.
It's been a tough week. And my kid's sick. So, like, every day I think I'm going to take her to school and I'm going to go into my studio, and then I end up not doing that. And so it's like I work from home, but I'm, like, wearing shorts and a sweater. Like, I'm not really – do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Which you can't kind of get into your groove.
I love this, and I love what I'm doing, and I'm getting work done, but I also feel like I'm – it's like a long weekend, like a working weekend instead of a work day. And
I sometimes think the best thing that you can do to yourself, like when you have those kind of weeks or whenever things just feel like they're not going to plan, is to let yourself off the hook completely. Mm-hmm. And then somehow you magically get more done than you thought you were going to, because you've just said to yourself, do you know what, if I don't get this done, I'll get it done next week, or... It's not that pressure. I think it's that pressure half the time.
I agree. There's, I was blogging every day, and I'd sent that commitment for myself, and I haven't blogged since the day after the election.
Right.
And I will. I'll start again. You know, I even have embarrassing text out there saying I'll be back tomorrow with a, and I'm not back tomorrow, but I'm just, I can do other kinds of things. I can do client work and stuff, but. Blogging is sort of personal, even when it's about, you know, a presentation that you heard. It's still
it's time consuming as well, and especially when you have an audience like you do, and you know that whatever you put out is going out to a lot of people on Twitter. You need to make sure that what you're blogging about isn't something that's going to sort of heavily load you up as well with responses. If you're in the kind of mood where you're a bit snappy, or you're a bit tired, or you're not in the mood for sort of certain responses that you might get if you put content out there, it's better just to leave it.
Do you you Instagram a lot?
Yeah, not a lot, actually. I need to get better at it, but yeah. Well,
do you find that when you do it professionally on behalf of clients, that it's less fun to do it for you? That you're sort of like, eh?
No, actually. If anything, it makes me realize that Instagramming, if you're going to be doing it in the form of, like, you're a blogger, or you are someone who is putting, you are the product, you are a personal brand, and you're lending yourselves different products or things or whatever, it has to be notched up a gear now. It's very strange. So in actual fact, it's led me to looking at all kinds of things about filters and cameras and the best cameras for Instagramming. And it's not just about the iPhone anymore. It's about the photography is like a complete notch up if you're going to be doing Instagram as like a thing.
Rather than Instagram has really changed.
Oh, crazy. When
it started, it felt like if you were serious, you used Flickr.
Yeah.
And if you just wanted to take a picture of your friend with your iPhone, you used Instagram. And now I see so many incredible photographs at Instagram, like one after another.
Oh, the quality of what some of these people are producing. I mean, it's absurd, really, how they have enough hours in the day. But it's completely different platform now. Completely different.
And the users did that, right? Yeah. I'm sure that the designers of the system did things that encouraged this kind of use because they were smart. But there are these. I don't know what this is called, but there's these. I love architecture photographs, and I love city photographs, and I take city photographs, but mainly from the street and occasionally if I get to a window. But there's these kids, I don't know what this is called, they go up on top of these ridiculously tall buildings in New York and Hong Kong and just all over the world, and they dangle their feet over the side and then look down and shoot.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Those photos are amazing.
They are.
And you definitely see this, it's this sort of God point of view, and like the architect, what was in the architect's mind when they designed the place. But my God, that's so terrifying. And I just think, okay, you know, I like taking pictures of buildings, but I'm not going to, I look at that and go, how do they have the nerve to do that? They're like bungee jumpers. Although there's some, I read that like 1 in 10 people has a certain different, either something's missing from their genes or something's different in their genes such that they don't have the fear of death that the rest of us have. So oh, they really? Actually enjoy, yeah, so like risking their life to get a photo doesn't seem like a thing to them.
Wow. I'm not one of those people.
No, me either. Me either. Makes me want to put my camera away.
Yeah, I'm definitely not one of those people. I struggle with even putting myself in the frame sometimes, let alone anything else.
Well, it's late where you are now, right? It's 8:20.
8:20, yeah.
And it's 3:20 here. Probably this will go up tonight, although Friday night, you never know. Well, of course, it's early afternoon in California.
Yep.
I don't know where the listeners are. They're all over the world. So, and I don't know when the show will go up, but whenever it is, I hope someone enjoys it. I really want to thank you for doing this. I just reached out to you today. It's not like we planned this whole thing. And I really appreciate, I always have a good time talking with you in real life and on this, because I always feel like we get to a lot of stuff that matters to creative people.
Right. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I was only going to sit in front of the television tonight because I'm still jet lagged.
Oh my God, you did this jet lagged? All right, yeah. Because you just flew back to London from New York, from San Francisco.
Yeah, no, not just. It's just my Instagram pictures. I put them up late for security reasons.
That's smart.
Yeah.
You take care.
Thanks.
Enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the weekend. And everybody, we'll be back with another Big Web Show soon. Thanks.